You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Radio Crime Solvers and one of my favorite detective dramas, The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, featuring Raymond Chandler's private eye, Philip Marlowe. Marlowe was a hard-boiled detective who wasn't afraid to do what he had to do to get things done. At one point during its run, The Adventures of Philip Marlowe was the top-running radio show in America. Enjoy.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison of the grave. There's no other end, but they never learn.
For your enjoyment, Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum brings you Raymond Chandler's most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Here's a taste treat you can enjoy indoors, outdoors, at work, or at play. The cool, long-lasting mint flavor refreshes you. The smooth, steady chewing helps keep you fresh and alert, adds enjoyment to whatever you're doing. Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Face to Forget.
All right, wise guy. I told you once you couldn't come up here to this room, Marlowe.
That's right, landlord, but I found all I needed.
Well, you won't be able to use it after I teach you some manners. Snooper! Oh! I'll teach you to break into a respectable room and house.
Not leading with your rights, you won't. Now get up. Come on, get up! Okay. I'll teach you something about cooperation, landlord. All I wanted to do was look this room over, and I was nice about asking.
Cut it out. I got my rules. Yeah,
and I got a job to do. I've been looking for Dave Stroud for a solid week, and his trail finally led me here.
I got to look out for my roomer's privacy.
Sure, sure. Only Dave Stroud checked out of here this afternoon. He's no longer your guest. Anyway, I found enough in here to know Stroud's taking the train tonight for San Francisco. So that winds up my lecture, and I'm happy to say my business with you and your charming establishment. Good night, landlord. When I stepped out of the cheap, musty rooming house into the warm night, I felt for the first time in a week that I wasn't wasting my time. That by tomorrow I'd know why a quiet young guy named Dave Stroud had suddenly dropped everything that gave life some sense. Everything from a lovely girl to a fine job and vanished. Completely. I stopped in a phone booth, called my client, and told her to meet me in an hour at the Leopard Spot, the bar in her hotel. Then I made a reservation on the 10 o'clock train for San Francisco, went home and threw a toothbrush and shirt into a bag, and when I walked into the Leopard Spot, I was right on time. I found my client, Ellen Wyatt, in a booth near the back. The soft rose lights touching her face made me wonder all over again what kind of pressure it could possibly have been to drive Dade Stroud away from a girl like this.
I tried to wait in my apartment upstairs, Phil, but I just couldn't. Is it good news?
I hope so, Ellen. That broken-down rooming house over in East L.A. paid off all right.
Dave was staying there?
Yeah, he had been, under the name of Donald Stranigan.
But why would he take a place like that? He must have plenty of money with him.
Oh, well, the city's cluttered with those joints. They're as common as tin cans. He figured you can't look into all of them. We were just lucky.
Then he knows what he's doing. There's nothing wrong with him, like amnesia.
No, it's something else, Ellen.
Oh, good evening, Miss Wyatt. Martini?
Yes, please.
For you, sir?
Martini sounds fine.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Marlowe, maybe that hunch I had about gambling, maybe it was right after all. Couldn't some kind of terrible jam with gamblers do this to Dave?
Yeah, it might. But I checked that and drew a blank. Say, listen, Ellen, the description of Dave I got at that rooming house isn't too complete. That snapshot I asked you about, you bring it?
Oh, yes.
Oh, good.
It's in my purse.
Ah.
Here. Ah. That was taken on our first date 4 years ago.
4 years ago, huh? Those years made quite a change in both of you.
Yes. Dave and I are good for each other, Phil.
Oh, sure.
I only hope that the next four
Here we
years...
Here are. Martini, very dry.
Oh.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Well, I wish we had the kind of news we could toast.
Maybe we will. Sooner than you think.
You've got a new lead? You know where Dave is?
Well, close enough to be pretty sure he's taking the 10 o'clock to San Francisco.
San Francisco?
Yeah, and so am I.
Phil.
How about coming down to the station with me, huh?
Me? But do you think that's wise? What if he saw me first?
Well, it's worth a chance for you to point him out to me. What do you say, baby? Got something to drink to now?
Yes, and I better do it fast before I start to bawl. Tears would be awful in a martini. No luck, Phil. I still haven't seen him.
Wait a minute. How about that one, Ellen? Over there at the cigar counter.
Yeah. Oh, the fellow in the T-shirt?
Yeah.
Uh-uh. Dave couldn't look that sloppy. And besides, he's taller.
Oh.
Well, that's it, Phil.
Yeah. Well, I guess we missed him. I better get aboard, huh?
This kind of scares me. You don't think Dave just pretended to be leaving, that he tricked you?
No. Those leads weren't planted. They weren't that good. Don't worry, baby. Dave will be on this train when it pulls out. I'll bet my last buck on it.
Find him for me, Phil.
Sure. You just keep that chin up.
I will.
Okay.
And call me the very first chance
last
you get.
Call
right.
For train 61.
Ooh, pardon me, lady. I'm sorry.
Hey, you. What? You with that brown bag.
Me?
Yeah, just a short minute, my friend. Unless you happen to favor dirty shirt size 17, you're in for a big disappointment.
What are you talking about?
Well, I think you made a small mistake there. Isn't that my bag?
I'm afraid not, mister. CP is in Philip, M is in Marlowe.
Well, how do you like that? I saw you pick it up back there at the information booth. That's where I left mine. I could have sworn it belonged to me. I'm sure sorry.
It's all right. Happens to everybody sooner or later.
Yeah, well, now that's mighty big of you, friend. Say, you're going to be on old 61 for Frisco, too, aren't
Great
you?
Right, so, yeah.
Well, let's call this an introduction. Arback's my handle. Manny Arback, on the road for Pfeiffer Plumbing Fixtures. Yes, sir. I'll see you on board, friend.
Not much doubt about that.
No, we might get up a little game. Fun, huh?
Oh, fine.
Yeah, well, I better shake a leg and get my bag. I'll find you, all right. I never forget a face.
Maybe I ought to cut my head off. I stopped off in my compartment just long enough to drop my suitcase. Then as we pulled out, I moved through the train to the dining car and picked a seat where I could keep an eye on the rest of the tables for Dave Stroud, who, even if I didn't recognize his face, I knew from his fiancée would handle a knife and fork European style, be likely to order liver and bacon and drink tea without sugar, and would probably be dressed in woolen tweeds with the shirt collar open. Well, as soon as I sat down, the car began to fill. My table companion, a quiet tab collar type, had his own business and knew how to mind it, almost 100%, which he did for the 15 minutes it took him to eat.
Well, I don't know why food always tastes better on a train, but it does. Thanks for letting me share the table with you.
Oh, not at all.
Perhaps I'll see you later in the club car. We might have a nightcap.
Yeah, it's a deal.
Fine. So long.
So long.
So there you are,
Marlowe.
Oh,
fine.
Say, I've been looking high and low for you, my friend. What you doing in here? They serve nothing but food in this car, you know. Say, who's your pal?
I don't know. He was here 15 minutes and we didn't get that far.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
You do?
Yeah, those quiet birds give me the willies, too. You know, friend, I've seen him someplace before, and I never forget a face. You didn't catch his name, huh?
He didn't throw it.
Oh.
You like that, huh?
Yes, sir, you're right on, my friend. Well, it'll come to me. Faces are kind of a hobby with me. I meet a lot of people, but I never forget a... Hey, Have you lost somebody in here the way you keep looking around?
Yeah, but I think I found him again.
Hey, what's up? Where are you going?
Play follow the leader. I'll see you all back.
Hey, Marlowe, come back. You dropped something here.
In spite of the fog kicked up by the traveling typhoon who never forgot a face, I'd managed to catch a glimpse at the door of a bunch of tweeds and an open collar on a bill that exactly fit the 4-year-old snapshot in my wallet. I bucked a huddle of undecided dowagers blocking the aisle, but managed to keep them in sight all the way back to car 16 without being seen. There I watched him unlock compartment L and go inside. I was convinced it was Dave Stroud, but at this point I had to be sure. I went to look for the conductor and finally found him tucked away at a lonely table back in the club car, as intent on his ticket count as a cheat at solitaire. I figured I could afford the time now, so I decided to wait. I headed back for the seat and I ran into my dinner partner, the tab color.
Well, hello again. You're a little early for that nightcap, but sit down anyway.
Thanks.
Oh, by the way, I'm Roy Tarney.
Oh, mine's Marlowe, Philip Marlowe.
Philip Marlowe? Why, I've read that name many times. You're the famous private detective.
Well, private detective anyway. Glad to know you, Tarney.
Privilege for me. Oh, are you looking for a match here?
Yeah.
Oh, keep them. Keep them. I have others.
Oh, thanks. Thanks again.
Are you on a case now, Marlowe, or shouldn't I ask?
Well, as a matter of fact, I...
Hey, Marlowe! Marlowe! Man, are you hard to hang on to. But you're mighty lucky I'm honest, my friend. You see this?
Yeah, I see. It's my wallet.
Yeah. When you bolted out of the dining car, you dropped it on the seat. I found it for you.
Oh.
Nothing fell out but this picture here. And is she all right, man? Oh, man. Who is she, boy? The name, I mean, huh?
Don't tell me. I bet you've seen her before.
Yeah, that's right. And I never forget a face.
Uh-huh. Well, thanks. Now, if you let me have it, I'm very grateful.
Yeah, sure. Glad to be of service, my friend. Anytime I can... Well, speaking of familiar faces, this is the gentleman that you had dinner with, huh?
That's right, Auerbach. This is the gentleman. Mr. Auerbach, Mr. Tarney, for better or worse, till your destination do you part.
How do you do?
Tarney. Now, that's funny. You know, I was just telling Marlowe here that I recognized you from someplace.
It's very unlikely. I have a fair memory myself. I don't remember you.
Well, I don't know. I'm pretty good. But hey, wait a minute. I'm getting it. Sure. Oh, this is silly. Why, I saw you tonight in the railroad station.
No, that's impossible. I was so late I nearly missed the train.
Me too. Only you had a good reason. Oh, yes, sir, my friend. You were kissing the little woman goodbye. I couldn't see her too well, but she was quite a looker. And judging from the way you were going at it, you... Yeah. Well, now, wait a minute, friend. I didn't mean any offense. I was just kidding you along. Yeah, well, I guess I'll go by my way into a little poker. Excuse me.
I suppose there has to be one on every train.
Yeah. They help the ride like a square wheel.
Yeah. Well, I think I'll go read a while, Marlowe. Good luck on your case.
Conductor climbed out of his pile of tickets to stretch. I went over, introduced myself, and asked the $64 question.
Car 16, compartment L, huh? Well, let's see. Oh, here it is, Mr. Marlowe. That room's occupied by one Daniel Stacy.
Daniel Stacy? Sure. Same initials as Dave Stroud.
But we're not carrying any Dave Stroud tonight.
Don't bet on that, conductor. It was that simple. I walked up through the train to car 16, and when I got to the door of compartment L, I'd already decided on how to handle Dave. To convince him that he had to go back to Ellen Wyatt regardless of what had happened to him. Yeah, I had it all figured until I heard it. It had come from inside. The door was unlocked, but the lights were out. When I got them on again, I realized that nothing was simple. Ever. Stretched out on the floor of Dave's room was Manny Auerbach, staring straight up as he rocked with the pitch of the train, the side of his head against a sharp steel corner, his eyes already beginning to glaze.
He said he knew I'd remember sometime.
Remember what? Why did you come here, Manny?
He said I'd remember.
Manny! Manny! Well, Marlowe, it's your move again. Let's see you tell this to Ellen Wyatt. Who's that? What? Ooh! Oh.
To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The lively, full-bodied, real mint flavor cools your mouth, moistens your throat, freshens your taste. And the chewing itself gives you a little lift, helps you keep going at your best. So for real chewing enjoyment that's refreshing and long-lasting, always keep Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. Healthful, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum will make every day more enjoyable. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's exciting story, The Face to Forget.
Either it had been the flat of the pistol crashing against the side of my head, or my head crashing against the stone-hard floor of the compartment. Then it turned light into dark and left me with a welt behind one ear that... size and shape of a cue ball. I couldn't tell which. But when I had both my eyes open, I knew that it didn't matter. That nothing mattered really, except that I was staring into Manny Auerbach's dead face. While only inches away, a pair of feet were moving. Feet that belonged to Dave Stroud, whose suitcase in tow was on his way out. One hand already on the doorknob. I went for him, or on the knees!
Let go! Let go, I say!
By the time... I was off the floor and after him. He was well out in front. But wrestling with a heavy steel door at the end of the empty passageway slowed him down. When we reached the platform between the cars, he was almost mine. But then suddenly a hand shot out of the dark, grabbed a fistful of shirt front and spun me hard against the opposite door.
No!
A hand that belonged to a man in a tab color. Mr. Roy Tawney, plus a shiny .22 automatic and minus his club car velvet voice.
Get up, Marlowe. We've got a little talk coming.
At this stage, it'll be a pleasure. Believe me.
We'll see. What do you want with Dave Stroud?
I'm a census taker who's real...
Cut it. Time's running short, Marlowe. When you get off at this stop coming up, you stay off.
Yeah? What's your angle?
Dave. He still needs my help, and he's still gonna have it.
No matter who he kills?
Kills? What's that supposed to mean?
Manny Auerbach, the chummy one who couldn't forget faces. He's very dead back in Dave's compartment.
Well, then that loudmouth wasn't just a blowhard salesman after all. He was what Dave's been running from, one of those lousy card shop...
Slips, huh, Tony?
Yeah, but they don't count, Mr. Detective. Nothing counts anymore but Dave getting out of a jam that can cost him his hide. Just for the record, that game back in L.A. 3 months ago that cost Dave every cent he had plus 10 grand he didn't was about as level as the rest of that knee-pants town ever gets.
Which makes you what?
Two things, smart Alec. First, a guy from Detroit, a real town, who doesn't like a lousy fix. And second, I like a fix even less when the sucker on tap is my own brother. Now, Peeper, get back away from that door. The station's on that side. I wouldn't want you to run for it and get shot before you got to say a few words. Back over here, Marlowe.
Take it easy with that gun, huh? They go off, you know.
All right, the pitch. Let's have it now. What's Dave to you?
Ellen Wyatt. Mean anything?
Not very much. But Dave is sorry about that. So when you get back to your client, you
Carter,
tell it... Hold it. Just like you are and stay cheerful.
This stop, Carter. Carter, gentlemen.
Conductor, this train wait here a while? I mean, is there any time to get off and stretch?
No, sir. Just stop long enough to pick up a little mail. Leave a little mail once in a while. Take on a passenger. Hardly ever, though. Carter folks aren't much on traveling. Oh, by the way, aren't you the gentleman who was looking for Mr. Stacy?
I found him, thanks.
Oh, don't mention it. Glad to be of service. Say, don't get too close to the edge here, gentlemen. Carter, California.
We were talking about Ellen Wyatt, Tony. Why didn't precious brother Dave ever let her know that he had to lay low, that he was in a jam with gamblers? A bunch of roses with card enclosed could have gone a long way, or again, there's the telephone.
Oh, button it up, Marlowe. I don't know any of the details. Maybe the kid didn't want it to know he couldn't stay away from the pasteboards. Maybe he just didn't want it to worry. Anyway, that's not the point.
Then what is?
That a broken heart beats a broken skull 7 times a week. You should know that much, Peeper.
So?
So I don't want you, the girl, or anyone else to know where Dave is heading. At least not until I get back to L.A. by my lonesome and call a few spades just that.
Like they do in Detroit, maybe, huh?
Like they do in Detroit, no, maybe. You tell the Wyatt, babe, I'll look her up then. Now you get over there at the door and you take your choice.
Jump or get pushed?
Jump, pushed, or shot. Go on, Marlowe. This is where you get off. On, the longer you wait, the hotter it's gonna be. Name it. Jump, push, or shot.
I couldn't say much for the alternatives. But one look back over my shoulder at the gaping .22 automatic leveled at my head and Tawny's ice-cold gray eyes above made up my mind for me. Jump, it had to be! Remember one thing about Carter, California. The right of way was more sand than stone. I was grateful.
Carter Station, Willis Henshed speaking. The Limited left 10 minutes ago. No, no package for you, Miss Lillispan. I'm sure, I'm sure. Huh? Me snapping at you. Now listen, Miss Lilly. Brass of some people. Say, what happened to you, son?
I tripped. Dad, this is important. Can you tell me where the Limited stops next?
Well, is anybody getting on at Murdoch Corner?
No. The first real stop. A good-sized town.
Let's see. Smoke cigars, son?
No. Look, Dad, this counts. Now, come on, tell me, will you?
Yeah, sure. Well, now, there's Fulton. That's a half-hour wait.
Oh.
You got a match, please, son?
Oh, yeah, here's a whole bookkeeping. Now, tell me, how far is Fulton?
Oh, 40, maybe 50 miles. Upgrade on the road.
How can I get there in a hurry? I got to catch that train.
Well, if you got a car, you can...
Where can I rent a car or get a cab?
It's your... Not a chance, sonny. Oh, excuse me. Jake's calling from Bakersfield. He's expecting a grandchild.
Hooray for Jake. Now listen to me, Dad. There's a dead man on the Limited and his killer as well, and I was tossed off the train. Now let's take the business.
What? Well, in that case, let's call ahead and get the police.
No, I don't want that.
Well, why not, son?
Because for one thing, the killer may have been justified. Self-defense and the sight of the law will toss him into a lot of panic. He'll only end up in more gunplay. For another, I have a very personal axe to grind.
Getting tossed off the train, huh?
Yeah, among other things. Now, will you tell me that coupe out there, is it yours?
Yeah, but I can't
for
let
50
you take
bucks?
My car. You're a cash?
Cash. Here. Also, here's my credentials. I'm a private detective out of L.A. I'll get your car back to you as soon as possible. I'll pay you another 50 when I do. Now, give me the keys, will you, quick?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Here. It's one in the middle.
Thanks, Dad, and don't worry. I'll drive real
What's the matter, son? Well, you're staring like you don't feel so good. What is it? Your head, maybe?
Yeah, my head, maybe. I ought to have it examined. Sometimes it's real slow coming up with the truth.
The truth? What do you mean, son?
I mean, I got a big fat hunch. A hunch that may be able to stop a second murder. If I make it to Fulton in time. So long, Dad. Thanks a lot. You've been a great help. My apologies and congratulations to Jake. Like the station agent himself, Willard Hanzard's coupe was a little less than spry. But with the accelerator jammed hard to the floor and only a straight, empty highway ahead, I managed to keep it at a straining 70 most of the way. And 50 minutes later, when I tore into Fulton and followed the street markers to the station, a long, low, welcome sound in the night told me I was on time. The train was just getting underway again. I slammed to a stop at the end of the depot, piled out of the coupe and started to run for the last car. But I changed my mind. The train could chug on its merry way without me. After all, it was going without Dave Stroud and his big brother. The two men were walking down the deserted platform toward me. I slid back into the shadows of a pile of crates and waited, my hand tight on the .38 in my pocket, suddenly positive that my hunch was now a sure thing. Roy Tawny was not Dave's brother, but he was the one who had murdered Manny Auerbach in car 16, compartment L. And he was ready to try murder again.
All right, Stroud, that's far enough. Hold it there.
Tawny, you're out of your mind. You've got no reason to kill me. I'll never say anything. Ellen knows that. That's why I ran. I could never turn Ellen over to the police. I love her.
Oh, yeah, sure, you're nuts about her. You got lots of reasons to be, haven't you? Reasons like Ellen crossing you up for me and a tall stack of dough. Reasons like knowing that we're both responsible for knocking off our ex-boss to come into that dough. Sure, kid, you got lots of reasons to love her.
But, Tawny, I tell you, I do. I ran away, didn't I?
Oh, but of course, Mr. Stroud, of course you ran so that you could wait for a smart time in the smart place to try blackmail.
No, no, that's not it. I ran because I love Ellen. Because whatever she's done has been your fault.
Oh, no, kid, you got it all wrong. The lady was the pilot all the way. Even to hiring a lousy peeper named Marlowe to tag you so that I'd know where to get my hands on you.
The man on the floor in my compartment? The dead man?
That was a loudmouth salesman with a memory for faces. He would have spoiled everything if he'd remembered that he saw me with Ellen in the railroad station and passed it on to Marlowe. I had to shut him up and then give the peeper a big cock and bull story about you being my brother and in hot water with gamblers.
And Marlowe was the other one, the one who grabbed for me.
That's right, Stroud. That was Marlowe. Too bad he didn't grab better, isn't it?
Yeah, perfect shame, Tony.
Well, you dirty louse! Oh, watch out! He's got a gun!
Makes two of us!
Rotten dick!
Is he dead, Marlowe?
Yeah, Dave. Even in Detroit, he'd be called dead. Come on, Dave. We got some telephone calls to make. The police, for one.
All right. Marlowe, is all this really true?
Yeah, I'm afraid so, Dave. A girl you wouldn't turn in for murder wanted to murder you. Believe it, kid, all at once. It'll be easier later on that way.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Marlowe, for getting here when you did. You saved my life.
Well, not exactly. A guy named Willis Hanzard gets part credit for that. Guy who runs a railroad station at Carter, California, and also smokes cigars and sometimes runs out of matches.
What does that have to do with it?
Everything, Dave. See, Hanzard needed a light, and I gave him a book of matches that Roy Tunney had given me earlier in the club car. I hadn't noticed them then, but I did when Hanzard used them. They came from the Leopard Spot, Dave.
The Leopard Spot?
Yeah.
The cocktail lounge at Ellen's hotel?
That's right. And I couldn't buy Tawny's having them as just coincidence to tie them into Ellen too tight. A hunch said so. Wait here, will you, kid? I'll only be a couple of minutes. I've got a long-distance call to make before we get in touch with the police.
To Ellen? But what are you going to tell her, Marlowe?
Anything, Dave. Anything that'll keep her right where she is, ready and waiting for what's going to turn out to be the, L.A. police. I won't be long, kid. After the telephone call, Dave and I spent a long hour with the Fulton police, explaining why a man named Roy Tawney was lying in their quiet railroad station, face down in a pool of his own blood. And it was a long hour again with the railroad officials who arrived with their own set of questions. Well, it was 4 o'clock in the morning before we were finally aboard a train, heading back for L.A. Dave Stroud and I sat opposite each other in silence through that bleak, empty hour when you can almost feel the day that's coming up nudge the one that's just gone by. I was real glad to see it go. I sat there looking at Stroud and wondered if he'd ever heard the lyrics of a song a train whistle always makes me think of. My mammy done told me. When I was in knee pants, my mammy done told me, son, a woman's a two-face, a worrisome thing who'll leave you to sing the blues in the night.
Remember, friends, to make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. There's lots of cooling, real mint flavor in every stick. And chewing Wrigley's Spearmint helps keep you feeling fresh and alert. You feel better, work better, get more fun out of doing things. So indoors, outdoors, wherever you go, keep some healthful, refreshing Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell, Sammy Hill, Roy Rowan, Parley Bear, Larry Dobkin, Elliot Reed, and Junius Matthews. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum invite you to be with us next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time I tangled with three snakes. The first was made of gold, the second wore a mustache, and the third was in the bag. And each in its own way, poison.
Bob Stevenson speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. There's no other end, but they never learn.
Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, the refreshing, delicious treat that gives you chewing enjoyment, presents for your listening enjoyment Raymond Chandler's most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Here's a taste treat you can enjoy indoors, outdoors, at work, or at play. The cool, long-lasting mint flavor refreshes you. The smooth, steady chewing helps keep you fresh and alert, adds enjoyment to whatever you're doing. Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, the makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum are glad to bring you tonight's exciting story, The Gold Cobra.
My mama done told me.
Get it before it's history. Hiya, Mr. Marlowe.
Hiya, kid.
Get it while it's hot. Take the seventh race. Closing waltz.
Hey, mister. Could you please help a blind man? Could you let me have a buck for my first square meal in a week?
You mean your first shot in an hour, don't you, Jake?
Huh? Oh, Mr. Marlowe, hi.
How are you?
Sorry I didn't recognize you. Must be these dark cheaters.
Yeah, must be. How's business, Jake?
Oh, I seen better. You too, huh?
Yeah, sure.
Well, you're just standing around here in front of your office for the fresh air, maybe.
No, I...
No, don't tell me. That ain't it. I got it.
Huh?
You're making a rendezvous, a secret meeting, huh?
No, Jake, I'm just waiting for something.
Holy catfish! Look at that jerk out in the middle of traffic. The guy with the suitcase. Getting out of that cab right in the middle of the street. Hey, he's coming this way.
And he acts like the guy I'm waiting for, suitcase and all. Here, Jake, here's the starter on that meal. I'll see you. Goodbye.
I got you. So long, Mr. Marlowe. Thanks a million.
Sir, tell me quickly. You're Mr. Marlowe, Philip Marlowe?
That's right. You're Roth Wingham?
Correct. Mr. Marlowe, is your car nearby?
Yeah, right over there.
Good. Come, Mr. Marlowe. We've got to get out of here. My very life may be in danger. And have you been seen with me, sir? Yours as well. Quickly, Mr. Marlowe. We must be off.
Yeah. Well, this way, Mr. Wingham. My new client was right out of Charles Dickens, but I bit my lip and tried to play it straight. We piled into my car and took off. Mr. Wickham, his owl eyes glued to the rear window, watched and worried hard about whether we were being followed. But finally, he was convinced that we were safe. He relaxed his grip on the suitcase and fumbled for a cigarette. Roth Wickham was maybe 50 and had a large, bald head on a small, well-dressed body that just couldn't sit still. Also, it was at least 3-1 that the gentleman had ulcers. He was the type.
Keep driving, please, Mr. Barlow, and do watch the rearview mirror.
Okay.
Now, sir, what exactly did I say to you on the telephone?
Well, you wanted me to fly to Chicago tonight with a suitcase that contained an item worth $20,000, which was earmarked for some museum, right?
Oh, yes, the Ashwell Museum.
Yeah, and you said something about an eccentric here in L.A. who owned the item. That's about all I caught. That and the fact that you were very worried.
And I still am. Now, first, Mr. Marlowe, a word about the man who was
first, Mr. Winkham, a word or two about the item itself, huh? You know, I can't afford to play carrier pigeon without so much as a peek. It's too much like leading with my chin. Now, what is it?
A gold cobra.
A gold what?
A cobra. A snake, sir. Made of 250 separate links, each some 2 inches in diameter and each solid gold.
Links, huh? That makes the snake flexible like the real thing, is that it?
Yeah, precisely. And the cobra's hood, Mr. Marlowe, is spun gold.
Oh?
Originally, the object was a ceremonial piece. It comes from India, from a kingdom that no longer exists. Mordecai Ziff bought it there several years ago.
Mordecai Ziff, huh?
Yes.
He's the eccentric who lives here in L.A.?
But perhaps intellectual is more the proper term.
Oh.
He lives near here in the Hollywood Hills, and he is the one who is presenting the cobra to the museum.
I see. Well, tell me, what's your connection, Mr. Wickham?
I am a friend, Mr. Marlowe. Mordecai and I studied together in Europe many years ago.
Really?
We have remained fast companions through the years. And now that his health is failing, he is a man of 60. I wish very strongly to repay his kindnesses. But I need your help to do it.
Yeah, well, that brings us to the party following you. Who's that?
A creature named Akbar, Mr. Marlowe.
Akbar?
Yes. He's an East Indian, and he wants the cobra badly. That's all I know of him, except, sir, that he has no claim, morally or legally. He's merely a fanatic.
Yeah, well, that's not to be sneered at. It's a full-time job. Tell me, what does this Akbar look like?
Well, he's thin, he's dark-skinned, dark hair, vicious, cold eyes. You'll have to be on the... Mr. Marlowe, behind us, sir, that taxicab. We're being followed. Drive, sir!
You see who it is?
No, but it could be Akbar. Try to lose him.
That's exactly what I'm trying to do. The cobra's in the suitcase here, right?
No. This suitcase is empty.
Oh?
A decoy. The gold cobra is in a similar bag that has been checked at the Beechwood Plaza Hotel. Turn again, Mr. Marlowe. The cab is gaining.
Right.
Now, sir, this envelope contains the claim check for the bag, as well as your airline ticket to Chicago. Also, there's a $100 bill included.
Oh.
And you'll get another one when we meet tomorrow night in Chicago. I'll look for you at the Dearborn Street station at 8 o'clock. He's still with us, Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah, and that's a red light ahead. We can't slip through.
Then it's time for me to go. And time for Akbar to follow me. Me and the empty bag. Good luck, Mr. Marlowe. I'm counting on you, sir.
By the time the light had changed, the spry Roth Winkham had already made it to the sidewalk, the empty suitcase conspicuously in hand. And when my rearview mirror showed the cab had given up the chase, I figured the quantity known as Akbar had taken the bait and followed Winkham. All of which made my next stop the check room at the Beechwood Plaza Hotel.
Yes, sir, what'll it... Well, hello. Can I be of some assistance, maybe?
I wouldn't be surprised. But at the moment, I just want my suitcase. Here, honey, it's a black bag.
A black bag?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Here we are. Number 4511. Number 4511. Comes out even. Must be yours, all right.
Yeah, it must be. Thanks, baby. Here. Small token of my appreciation. Oh.
What's the matter, handsome? Your wife just waltzed in?
No wife. Just trouble. Goodbye, princess. My first glance at the man standing in the hotel entrance was almost enough. A lot of people could have jet black unruly hair on top of a flyweight build, but very few people had that kind of wild, sparkling eyes. They were reserved for fanatics named Akbar. When he spotted me and started coming in a hurry, it was time for me and the suitcase to head for the nearest exit. I took a side door just beyond the check room, and from there ran the length of the narrow, twisting corridor that led to the rear of the hotel, and out to the alley where I'd parked my car. There I ducked behind a pile of trash cans, slipped my hand over the .38 in my shoulder holster, and waited. But after a full minute went by, I figured that it was safe to go to my car. And it would have been if the striking redhead crouched on the seat inside hadn't been holding an also striking pistol. Just made for ladies.
Don't bother getting in the car, Mr. Marlowe. In fact, don't do anything but hand over that suitcase. Here.
on the seat.
Your mind's made up, huh?
Definitely. And keep your hands at your sides. Now, let me have those keys you're holding. Come on, toss them here. Now, turn around. Thank you. I'm glad you're cooperative.
Don't mention it. It's your winning smile. Anything else?
Yes. Walk in the direction you're facing. Go on.
Walk it is, baby. But first tell me, who do I see for my car?
Don't worry. It'll be returned safe and sound.
Yeah, what about the suitcase? It's got all the clothes I have in it.
Oh, sure. You look so fetching in gold cobra, don't you? Good night, Mr. Marlowe.
The shock of fire red hair gunned my car the length of the alley and then swerved on two wheels into the busy street beyond and was gone. I followed to the end of the alley and started walking toward the hotel. And I saw something else. It was Akbar running toward a hack stand. He had also seen my car disappear, and that obviously meant that he wanted the first cab in line to take him someplace in a hurry. But the driver was waiting for a fare, which forced him to the only other cab in line, and almost gave me time to get to him. Almost. But not quite. That left only an outside chance that Akbar had tossed an address to the driver before he knew that the cab was taken. Yeah, but it was an outside chance that paid off.
Yeah, sure he gave me an address, pal. You know, I had the flag down. Like an old doll inside.
Yeah, listen, friend, this counts. What was that address? Come on, the right answer's worth 10 to you.
A saw?
The same. Here.
Oh, no.
All right, what was it?
Let me think, pal.
Come on.
I got it. Outpost Road, number 818, I think. Yeah, 818 Outpost Road.
818, Hollywood Hills, huh?
Uh-huh. Someone up there you know, pal?
Yeah, it could be. Get moving. 818 Outpost Road.
But, pal, I already told you.
Heard you. There's another 10 in it, and let's forget the old doll. Come on, bust a roll.
Well, pal, the corner mansion there is 800 Outpost, so this next job must be it. Whew. Looks like the Taj Mahal joint.
Yeah, that plus enough grounds to build a ballpark, grandstand included. I'll get out here, take the driveway on foot.
Okay, pal, whatever you say. Hey, you want me to wait?
Yeah, you better. No, I think I see my own car up there. Here's the 10, thanks.
Okay, pal, so long. Hey, give my love to the Roger, huh?
Brother, what a backdrop for a harem. 50 beautiful girls, 50.
Kindly stand just where you are. This rifle is loaded and the safety not on.
It was hard to believe. At the top, a genuine African pith helmet, and under that, a pudgy, cherubic, smiling face with red roses for cheeks and dimples, an inch deep. And the rest fit, too. A round little body dressed in a khaki shirt, riding breeches and polished leather boots. Happy of the seven dwarfs in jungle getup. There, the individualism ended, because like everybody else I'd met tonight, his interest was in the cobra, exclusively.
Now, Mr. Whoever you are, where is that snake?
Have you tried the grass? I understand snakes love it.
This is not the time to jest. There's nothing funny about that cobra.
Not unless $20,000 happened to tickle your funny bone.
For the last time, where is the cobra? The truth.
Okay, the truth. Frankly, my friend, I haven't the slightest idea. Honest, I haven't. Happy folded up on one punch like it was built on hinges. I headed for the Taj Mahal on a run. But when I was past my car and had gone the slippery length of a tiled porch that led to a pair of half-open etched glass doors, I slowed to a walk at the sight of a single light that came from a beaded lamp in a room inside. Then I came to a full stop. The room was about the size of a basketball court with plush decor that was strictly Far East. An elderly man wearing a bright yellow satin robe and also bright yellow satin turban was stretched out. Glassy eyes staring at the ceiling. The front of his robe an ugly blood stain. Beside him was the lady with the red hair. And next to her, the suitcase that wouldn't stay put. It was a good time for me and my 38 to announce ourselves. Well, this certainly outclasses the alley, doesn't it, Red?
What?
And now it's your turn to keep your hands at your sides.
What do you want here, Marlowe?
Did you kill him?
No. Oh, no, I didn't. Believe me, I didn't. I hated Mordecai Ziff, but I wouldn't do this.
No, of course not.
How could I even think of it? You only stick up people in alleys, steal cars, walk off with gold lucky pieces worth 20 grand or better, huh?
Marlowe, I didn't do this. My gun hasn't even been fired. Here, look.
Don't try it, Red. I'll look when I'm ready. First, I want to make sure the gold cobra is still intact.
Of course it is. I never let it out of my hand.
We'll see. Stay right where you are, baby. Don't move. I can unlock this with one hand and cover you with the other. Okay. Now we'll know if the cobra's...
Look! Look out!
Marlowe, it's real! A cobra!
Steady, steady, Red. Don't move! No! Oh, baby, you shouldn't have killed the lights. That makes the next move the cobra's. And my gun's worthless.
To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The lively, full-bodied, real mint flavor cools your mouth, moistens your throat, freshens your taste. And the chewing itself gives you a little lift, helps you keep going at your best. So for real chewing enjoyment that's refreshing and long-lasting, always keep Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. Healthful, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum will make every day more enjoyable. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's exciting story, The Gold Cobra.
We got one good look at a live cobra rearing up out of the suitcase, its hood distended, flicking its glossy, forked tongue, before the only lamp in the room shattered on the floor in a blue flash and total darkness surged in. For an endless moment, there was silence. As soft and thick as black velvet. Then we heard it. The snake was moving. We listened to it crawl slowly out of the suitcase, ease itself across the table, and slither to the floor.
Marlowe. Marlowe, it's coming toward us.
Stand still, baby. Freeze. Don't move a muscle.
I can't do it, Marlowe.
It's our only chance. Do you hear me? No matter what happens, don't move.
Marlowe, I'm getting dizzy. I'm
Hold
afraid
on.
I'm going to pass.
No, baby, All hang right. on, hang on, I tell you. Now, Red, listen to me, listen to me. Talk. Start talking, don't stop. But talk softly.
I...
Who are you, Red? Tell me. What's your real name? Tell me.
Abigail Seaburn.
All right, who killed Ziff, Abby?
I...
Who was it? Come on, answer me. Keep talking.
I don't know, Marlowe. I told you the truth.
Why did you come here to Ziff's place?
He swindled my Aunt Marcelle out of all her money before she died.
Yeah, go ahead.
Money that was supposed to come to me.
Swindled her how?
He was a mentalist.
Yeah.
A fake mind reader and fortune teller. He told her lies that made her keep giving him money until there was nothing left.
Atta girl, keep it up, baby, keep it up. Why did you take that suitcase away from me at the hotel? Answer me, Abby, think. Come on.
I spied on Ziff. I found out about the gold cobra.
Yeah, go ahead.
I knew if I once got my hands on it, I could force Ziff to return the money he tricked my aunt out.
Keep talking.
Oh, Marlowe, I can't. I can't stand it that awful.
Quiet,
snake.
Quiet. Is it... Listen.
There's someone in here.
Yeah. Who's there? Who is it? He made it out the door.
The cobra struck at him, Marlowe.
Sounded like it was clear across the room from us. Now, look, Abby, stay where you are. Don't move. I'm going to see if I can find a light switch on the wall behind us. Stand real still, Abby. You hear anything?
No. Oh, hurry, Marlowe, please.
Believe me, baby, I am. There ought to be a switch here someplace. There's got to be a switch. Yeah, here it is.
Thank heavens, light again.
Where's that cobra?
I don't see it, Marlowe.
We'd better spot it. That thing's loaded with sudden death.
It's not here, I tell you. It's gone, Marlowe, it's gone.
Yeah, I guess you're right, for the time being. But in case it comes back, you better keep that gun handy.
Where are you going?
After the guy who beat it through that door. Right now, it pays to be ahead of the game. But not too far ahead, Abby, do you understand?
Oh, yes. At this point, mister, I'll do anything you say.
All right, then wait here for me. And keep your eyes open wide. This cobra's not the only killer loose in this joint. The door opened into a long passageway that offered as much chance to duck for cover as the inside of a loaded cannon barrel. And it was so narrow that if the Cobra had found its way out there, it would be within kissing distance when we passed. The hair on my neck remained at rigid attention while I edged along the hall toward a dim light at the end that came from a heavily draped green waiting room. In the center, facing halfway from me, was Akbar, the tousled-haired East Indian. His face was even grayer than before, and his hand trembled as he mopped his glistening forehead with a silk handkerchief. When I stepped in, he saw me from the corner of his eye. His face went stony. Only his right hand moved. It dived under his jacket for a weapon, but I brought my gun down hard on the point of his shoulder! His arm went limp, and a knife as wicked as the back end of a scorpion bounced across the floor.
Doc, you'll pay for this interference.
Not on the installment plan, Buster. We're going to settle up right now. How come the live Cobra in the suitcase you're so anxious about?
A fiendish trick.
And in the dark, it almost caught you, didn't it?
True, but Fortune smiled and the Cobra missed.
Yeah, but Fortune's a fickle lady, Buster. Come on, talk it up. Just what are you trying to promote?
The return of this sacred gold Cobra to its rightful place. The temple of my ancestors in India. The blasphemy perpetrated by Mordecai Zif will end only in the restoration of the gold Cobra. And I am prepared to do whatever I must do to accomplish this. Even to paying money for it.
Or killing?
Or killing. Death is transitory and therefore inconsequential.
Well, the Homicide Bureau has other ideas, Elephant Boy. So maybe we better just... I hate to leave you alone, Akbar, but you're better off in the long run. I watched just long enough to see Akbar melt toward the floor. Then I ran back along the narrow corridor to where I'd left Abby. When I stepped in the door, I stopped cold. She was facing me from across the room, her eyes wide with fear, her mouth still twisted from a scream. Directly behind her was an opening in what should have been a blank wall, and inside it, staring out with fixed hypnotic eyes, was a coiled cobra. Only this one was solid, gleaming gold. I started toward Abby, but I stopped again because there was a gun in my back.
That's quite far enough, Marlowe.
Roth Winkham. What is this?
You aren't going to like it, Marlowe, not one bit. Give me your gun. Give it to me.
Get it yourself.
I wanted to warn you, Marlowe, but he said he'd shoot me. He took my gun, too.
Come on, Winkham, why the switch?
Believe me, Marlowe, when I hired you tonight, I expected a much less bizarre ending to all this. I intended you to be peacefully on your way to Chicago by now, with the gold cobra safely in tow.
Still just a favor for a friend, huh?
Not exactly. That part was a small lie. Mordecai Zif was my partner.
Your partner?
Yes, my dear. When we felt it was time to move east again, I decided to break away from Mordecai and keep the gold cobra for myself, alone. But I needed help.
Because a fanatic named Akbar turned up who had his eye on the cobra, too?
Get over into that empty car, both of you. Go on, get over there. Move!
Take it easy!
No tricks with the pottery, Marlowe.
You shoved him into it.
Never mind. Leave that vase alone. Get back in the corner.
So it was you who killed Zif, huh?
I hated him. For every one of a million indignities I've suffered at his hands. As soon as I was sure you'd picked up the gold cobra, I came back here. And I killed him. I just finished it when
I got here.
Yes, young lady. I didn't know about you. But I managed to get out of here before you blundered in with that empty suitcase.
Empty suitcase? That's what you think.
That's what I mean. There on the table, empty. As it has been from the outset. Just as empty as the decoy I used. Obviously, Mordecai suspected my intentions to steal the gold cobra after all.
It was a bit more than that, Winkham, honest. Oh, what a cozy pair of chums you and Zif must have been. You really don't know what he put in that bag, do you?
What are you talking about?
Zif had a surprise all set for you, Winkham. It was
Marlowe, look! The snake, it's coming out of that vase.
Holy smoke, Winkham, there's a live cobra behind you.
I don't blame you.
Listen to me, will you?
Oh, that's such an old stunt. Stay back.
Marlowe, it's...
Winkham, kill it, I tell you, it's right behind
you.
Stop
it, you're only wasting time. No, no, no. No, no. I'm bitten.
Oh, no.
He's out, and it's no help, baby. That thing's still between us and his gun. Get behind me. Get behind me. Back in the corner.
Oh, Marlowe, we're trapped. We can't get past it.
Get back, will you? Maybe I can throw my coat over it long enough.
Hey, anybody here? What's the matter?
Oh, it's the jerk in the pith helmet. Hey, you! Over here!
What in the world's going on, anyway?
Get over here with that rifle, will you? Hurry!
What's the meaning of all the...
Birdie! Good heavens, my cobra.
Kill it, will you? Shoot!
Quiet. You're in a spot, folks.
No fooling.
She's got you within striking distance, so don't move. Just stand still. Very still. Come on, Birdie. Birdie, now. Come on. Take a look at the end of the rifle, Birdie. See the hole? That's it in the end. Fascinates you, doesn't it? Steady, folks, don't move. Keep looking at the little hole in the rifle, Birdie. That's right. Now back up. Back up. That's the way. Into the sack, Birdie. Little more. Now put your head in like a good girl.
Ha! That does it! Now we've got you safe and sound in the sack.
Oh. Whoever you are, brother, you're a genius.
Crumpler's the name, Otis Crumpler. Snakes are my business.
Most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Yes. The most amazing thing.
Abby. Abby.
Why, she's fainted. Well, what's wrong? Was she bitten?
No. But I know what she means. Look, if you don't mind, Crumpler, I think I'll sit down myself. Right here. Well, when the police finally moved in, they gave the degenerate Taj Mahal a long once over, and then we adjourned for more questions and answers to the hospital where Abby Seberg was getting a nerve back and Akbar was nursing the split scalp I'd given him. And while Otis Crumpler and I waited for the word downstairs in the coffee shop, Roth Winkham, my client, was busy dying of cobra venom in spite of Crumpler's best efforts.
Well, that's the way it is with cobras, Mr. Marlowe. Sometimes there's just nothing you can do. Sugar?
No, thanks. He had it coming, Otis.
Oh, both of them did. Mordecai Ziff was a slimy sort, too. You know, he'd been snooping around my snake farm for several days.
Oh?
And then tonight, when Birdie turned up missing from her cage, I just knew that he was behind it some way. But I couldn't figure why anybody would want to steal a cobra. You know what I mean?
Vaguely.
Phil, guess what?
What? Oh, Abigail Seberg is well enough for coffee. Sit down.
Oh, it's better than that. The police think there's a good chance that Akbar will be able to buy the gold cobra and I will get the money. How do you like that?
I like it fine. Where are we going to spend it?
Oh, well, I know a certain kind of snake bite remedy I'd like to try right now. I think we deserve it, mister. It comes in bottles and they call it scotch.
Oh, no, not whiskey.
Oh,
no? Oh, not for snake bite. Oh, no.
No,
that's the very worst thing you could do. You see, it stimulates the heart and makes the blood go faster. And that...
And that, Mr. Crumpler, is exactly the idea. Come on, Phil.
You know, there are many things that can lead to romance. Usually it's moonlight. Sometimes it's a bit of a song. But whoever heard of a snake playing Cupid? Yeah, well, there was a snake in the Garden of Eden. Yeah, but come to think of it, he kicked up quite a fuss.
Phil?
Hmm?
What are you thinking?
Snakes. What are you thinking?
Apples.
Remember, friends, to make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. There's lots of cooling, real mint flavor in every stick. And chewing Wrigley's Spearmint helps you keep feeling fresh and alert. You feel better, work better, get more fun out of doing things. So indoors, outdoors, wherever you go, keep some healthful, refreshing Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, presented by Wrigley's Spearmint Gum, bring you Raymond Chandler's most famous character and star, Gerald Moore. Philip Marlowe is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Howard McNear, Lynn Allen, Wilms Herbert, Lou Krugman, Bill Lally, and Michael Ann Barrett. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum hope you enjoyed tonight's adventure of Philip Marlowe and that you're enjoying Wrigley's Spearmint Gum every day. We invite you to be with us next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time I caught a killer on a lonely pelican's roost. It took a fistfight on the sidewalk, a flyway drummer with an ice pick in his back, and a vicious meeting on a yacht to do it. That plus the color of a girl's hair.
This is Bob Stevenson speaking, and this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Thanks for joining us for the adventures of Philip Marlowe. We always appreciate reviews, and we appreciate Spotify comments. Thanks for joining us here at 1001 Radio Crime Solvers. This is your host, John Hagedorn, and we'll be back soon.